Sattva,
sattva
anurupa,
anurupa,
according to the existence.
According to the existence.
Sarvasya,
sarvasya,
of everyone.
Of everyone.
Shraddha,
shraddha,
faith.
Faith.
Bhavati,
bhavati,
becomes.
Become.
Bharata,
Bharata,
O son of Bharat. Shraddha,
shraddha,
faith,
faith.
Mayaha,
mayaha,
full of.
Full of.
I am this,
this.
Purushaha,
purushaha,
living entity.
Living
yaha,
yaha,
who,
who,
yet,
yet,
having which,
having which.
Shraddha,
shraddha,
faith,
faith.
Saha,
saha,
thus,
thus.
Eva,
eva,
certainly,
certainly.
Saha,
saha,
he,
he.
O son of Bharat, according to one's existence, under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. Purport. Everyone has a particular type of faith, regardless of what he is. But his faith is considered good, passionate, or ignorant, according to the nature he has acquired. Thus, according to his particular type of faith, one associates with certain persons. Now, the real fact is that every living being, as stated in the 15th chapter, is originally a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, one is originally transcendental to all the modes of material nature. But when one forgets his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and comes into contact with the material nature in conditional life, he generates his own position by association with the different varieties of material nature. The resultant artificial faith and existence are only material. Although one may be conducted by some impression or some conception of life, originally he is nirguna, or transcendental. Therefore, one has to become cleansed of the material contamination that he has acquired in order to regain his relationship with the Supreme Lord. That is the only path back without fear. Krishna consciousness. If one is situated in Krishna consciousness, then that path is guaranteed for his elevation to the perfectional stage. If one does not take to this path of self-realization, then he is surely to be conducted by the influence of the modes of nature. The word Shraddha, or faith, is very significant in this verse. Shraddha, or faith, originally comes out of the mode of goodness. One's faith may be in a demigod, or some created god, or some mental concoction. One's strong faith is supposed to be productive of works of material goodness, but in material, conditional life, no works are completely purified. They are mixed. They are not in pure goodness. Pure goodness is transcendental. In purified goodness, one can understand the real nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As long as one's faith is not completely in purified goodness, the faith is subject to contamination by any of the modes of material nature. The contaminated modes of material nature expand to the heart. Therefore, according to the position of the heart in contact with a particular mode of material nature, one's faith is established. It should be understood that if one's heart is in the mode of goodness, his faith is also in the mode of goodness. If his heart is in the mode of passion, his faith is also in the mode of passion. And if his heart is in the mode of darkness, illusion, his faith is also thus contaminated. Thus, we find different types of faith in this world, and there are different types of religions due to different types of faith. The real principle of religious faith is situated in the mode of pure goodness, but because the heart is tainted, we find different types of religious principles. Thus, according to different types of faith, there are different kinds of worship. Sadvana rupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata shraddha mayo yang purusho yao yat shraddha sa eva saha. O son of Bharat, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. The first word in this verse is sattva. What does sattva mean? Can anyone say? Existence, yeah. Generally it's taken to, in at least in Srila Prabhupada's books, it generally means what he translates as goodness, but here it means one's existence. Then the translation, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature. Where does it say in this verse? What's the Sanskrit for the modes of nature? Where does that come? Doesn't come, does it? So why is Prabhupada talking about, why is he translating about the modes of nature? Any suggestions? Not you. Any suggestions? Now you have to have studied Gita quite well to know this one. 17th chapter, what's the title of this chapter? The divisions of faith. What are those divisions? How is it divided? According to the modes of nature. Okay, so the verse prior to this, it's actually Krishna answering a question of Arjuna's. And it doesn't, as several times happens in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks a question, Krishna doesn't seem to directly answer it. So, but he gives the whole background, and that gives, and then he answers it. Rather than giving the answer and then giving the background, he gives the background, and that gives the answer. So you'll find the answer at the end of the chapter. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, well, go and study Bhagavad Gita. You can do homework afterwards. So previous to this, Trividha Shavati, Trividha Bhavati Shraddha, Dehinam Sasvabhavaja, Satviki Rajasi Chaiva Tamasi Cheti Chantan Srinu. So Krishna says that there are, of the embodied living beings, there are three kinds of faith, and they are of sattvagun, rajagun, and tamagun. So now I'll explain that to you. So when Krishna, in this verse which we're reading today, the third verse, talks about shraddha, he's referring to specifically to the previous verse in which he's saying that shraddha, faith, is in three modes of nature, dictated by three modes of nature. I've several times spoken on this verse because I find it's a template for understanding, it's Krishna's template for understanding all of what in modern English parlance we call human psychology. It's a completely different approach to that of modern psychology. If we talk about psychology, then actually with the whole of Bhagavad Gita can be said to be a treatise on psychology, because it's according to the state of the mind that one acts. It's according to the state of the mind that one gets different kinds of bodies. The state of consciousness, the state of one's consciousness, is immensely important. Here in this verse, Krishna says, it dictates and defines who we are, the state of our consciousness. Who are we? If someone asks, who are we? We can say, well, my name is I don't know, Sunil Gupta. I'm 26 years old. I'm a IT professional working in Bangalore, originally from Delhi. You can give all these upadhis, or these mundane designations. But who you are, it doesn't tell who you feel who you are, your experience of who you are. So that experience, how we think, how we act, how we see the world, that can be grouped into three kinds: goodness, passion, ignorance, and of course there may be subgroups also. And also one is influenced by these modes of nature. And one seeks association according to the modes of nature. For instance, as Krishna explains, or has already explained, here in Bhagavad Gita, according to the modes of nature, we will prefer different kinds of food. It's people in the mode of goodness, like sweet, juicy, nourishing, fresh foods. Those in the mode of passion, like food which is very zingy, spicy, exciting. In the mode of ignorance, they like foods like dead bodies they like to eat, and rotten foods and things like that. So it all goes there. It's very important for understanding human psychology and for understanding where we are and where the human society is at and where we're heading for. And the Bhagavad Gita, it gives, as I say, a completely different perspective that of modern psychology, which is based on Darwinian evolutionary theory, that we are all, every living being is simply a combination of matter and consciousness. The phenomenon of consciousness, which is hardly even looked into until recently, and still now it's viewed with much suspicion by materialistic scientists. They materialistic in the sense that they don't believe there's anything beyond matter. They say you're wasting your time to study consciousness because it's just a combination of matter. It's just you don't understand it, that's all. We don't understand it either, but we will understand it in future. Sometimes they give the example that previously it was thought that light was some separate kind of entity, but then they discovered it's simply caused by, what I don't know what it's caused by, but if the scientists, they give some. Or fire. Previously it was thought that in wood and other materials there was an undiscovered element, a subtle element called phlogiston, which when fire was applied to it, it brought out fire. But now they discovered it's not true. So they think, well, consciousness, we can't explain it, but it must be material. Why it must be material, there's no philosophical basis for that, but it's based on their worldview that everything is material. So Krishna says here, Yo yad chadha sa eva sa. A person is what he believes. We are what we believe, our worldview. Shraddha is generally translated as faith. In this context, I prefer, if we want to get more into more detail, I prefer to translate it as worldview. We are what we believe. Worldview means the general way in which we perceive the world. The set of beliefs or assumptions, which we may not even be aware of, by which we view the world. For instance, despite much attempted propaganda to reverse this trend, still many people in the Western countries, especially, believe that white people are superior to non-white people. That somehow or other the color of the skin makes someone superior. So it's a, and people in America, especially blacks, have attempted to make another, that black is best. And there's a whole Rastafarian movement which says actually blacks are the chosen people and better to be black. Mostly blacks who believe that. But the whites have been so successful that they convinced many non-whites also, especially in India. And which means maybe they are superior if they're able to convince you. At least they're superior in trickery. At least we could say that. But it's a worldview. We may not even be able to define. Well, it's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious. Killing cows. What's this Hindu thing about not killing cows? It's just stupid. If you ask someone why, they say, well, it's obvious it's stupid. Cows are for eating. They don't think that, well, maybe they're not for eating. Maybe there's good reason not to eat, not to kill cows and eat cows. But for someone who's raised in a culture in which cow killing is considered normal, they think that to consider anything else is just absurd. So there's a worldview, and it's to have a worldview. It's not necessarily a philosophy. Srila Prabhupada, he would often ask people, what is your philosophy? What is your philosophy? Now, most people don't really have a philosophy. And most people don't sit down and think that, well, why do I think this? And why do I think that? And think about it deeply. But they have a worldview, which they think is a philosophy. But, well, I think that... And then they have to start thinking up a philosophy on the spot when Prabhupada asks them. Or they may be flattered. Yes, yes, I have a philosophy. I'm such a great intellectual. But many people say, well, I'm just living my life. Or life is meant for enjoyment. They may come up with some philosophy. Not that they... Srila Prabhupada would ask them their philosophy just for the sake of shooting it down and showing how it's incorrect, which in most cases it was, or bringing it to perfection. If someone says, well, I think life is meant to enjoy, I'm saying this hypothetically, then Srila Prabhupada could say then, well, are you enjoying? Are you enjoying in a world where you have to suffer and die? Enjoyment, yes, but real enjoyment, one has to find out where that is possible. So, or how it is possible to truly enjoy. And then one has to understand who I am. I want to enjoy, I want to be happy. First you have to understand who I am. But that is mostly dictated by our worldview. I'm a young Indian IT professional, and therefore I should dress like this and walk like this and talk like this like all the others do. You have this look on your face like you don't care a damn for anything, and smiling is not allowed because you're an IT professional and you have to be serious. And actually they all look pretty miserable, and that's normal to be in IT professional in India. So everyone has some kind of worldview. They may not even know what it is or think what it is, but we have to act, we have to negotiate the world with some kind of outlook. Even if it's only get food, eat, watch TV, we have to have some kind of outlook by which to live in this world. Animals don't. Animals' life is much less complex. They simply eat, sleep, mate, and defend. They don't think very deeply about it. And many humans also don't think deeply about it. So their worldview is animalistic. But the worldview that even people who don't think about it, who just think, well, I just want to live and live my life. There's all There's also philosophy behind that. There are philosophers, people who actually sit down and make a set of propositions and try to support it and come up with the idea that, well, yes, let's just enjoy life. For instance, Charvak, the ancient Indian atheist, came up with the theory, Arinam kritva kritam pibet, yavat jivat sukham jivat. That's the essence. Yavat jivat sukham jivat. As long as you live, live happily. Bhasmi bhutasya dehasya king punar agmano bhavet. And here's the philosophy to back it up, that when you die, you get burned and that's it, finished. So as long as you live, live happily. And how do you live happily? Eat ghee. And you can borrow it, or you can somehow or other you get ghee. Borrow, it doesn't matter, because you don't have to pay it back, because if you die anyway, what does it matter? So then you don't have to pay it back. So there's some attempted philosophical justification for all of that. There are also related words, ideology. It's not exactly the same as a philosophy. You could say it's one kind of philosophy. Some idea or some philosophical model that's applied to the world. For instance, communist ideology, the idea that there's some kind of philosophy behind a philosophical system that's supposed to be applied to the world with the idea that, well, it'll make the world a better place. Or we could say scientific ideology. That applies that the scientific method, that how we have to analyze, what are the rules of science. There's also dogma, which is a rather pejorative term. I don't know if this translation's gone silent, because it probably aren't terms like this in Telugu. It's come out. All these terms have come out of Western culture. So, but in Indian culture, we also have terms like vada, which means, I guess you could translate that as philosophy, a philosophy, as distinguished from tattva-vichara or tattva-jnana, which means philosophy as a discipline. So ideology, you could call that a vada. Thus we have maya-vada, tattva-vada, and so on. So a dogma means a belief system which it makes some assumptions, make some assumptions at the outset, which cannot be, which just have to be believed in. So it's like a belief system. And that particularly applies to religion, that therefore we speak of Christian dogma. It's just something you have to believe. And there may be some philosophical apparatus to try to justify it, but it's basically built on belief. So everyone has some outlook or belief, and it may be all mixed also. I mean, one may be a Catholic scientist also, so you may believe in the scientific method and also be a Roman Catholic, and also philosophically be an existentialist. And it's always possible to be all kinds of things, especially in the Catholic Church. So all these different views that people tend to gravitate towards different views and different philosophies according to their psychological state under the three modes of material nature. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasadyoni janmasu. We get different kinds of bodies, higher and lower, according to our association with the modes of nature. And we have all these different belief systems or philosophies, but mostly they are tied up within the modes of nature. And the whole what should we call it? Monolith, not exactly monolith, the whole structure of Western philosophy is within the modes of nature. There's no idea of going beyond the modes of nature. They don't know about this at all, so you can't get out of it unless you know you're within it. So we are what we believe. Yoyat shraddha sa eva sa. And literally we get a body according to the modes of nature that we contact. Urdvanga chanti sattvasta madhete shtanti rajasa jaghanya gunavritisto adhoga chanti tamasaha. Those in the mode of goodness, they go up. Those in the mode of passion, they remain in the middle. And those in the mode of ignorance go down to the abominable position. So Srila Prabhupada asks, what is your philosophy? Everyone is expected to have, you should, as a human being, you should have a philosophy. Otherwise, to not have a philosophy means we're in tamaguna, we're just like animals. When people say, well, Srila Prabhupada asks, what is your philosophy? They say, well, I don't have a particular philosophy, I'm just living my life. And Prabhupada would immediately point out, then you're not, what's the difference between you and an animal? Because ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samana metat pashubhyanaranam dharmena hina dharma hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhyanaranam. Humans and animals eat, sleep, fear, ahara nidra bhaya, and have sex. So the difference, or the special prerogative of human life, is to understand dharma. So without that, one is just an animal. So as Mr. Shetty in Bombay, when Prabhupada asked him, well, how do you spend your days? And he said, well, I get up in the morning and then I take some tea and I go to work. And then Prabhupada described his daily life, and Prabhupada said to him, so what is the difference between you and a pig? That's what he said to him, first time he met him. First thing he ever said to him, what's the difference between you and a pig? The pig also gets up and goes and searches for his food and comes back. So without that, without a philosophical quest, one actually, he's already like an animal. So Srila Prabhupada said that in human society, there's generally some system of religion. But that doesn't mean that because one has some religious system that he's particularly philosophical. He may just follow it blindly. And different religious systems are religious systems in the modes of nature. Some religious systems, they recommend and promote animal killing. That's in the mode of ignorance. So it may be mixed. The belief in God, that's some touch of goodness is there, some idea of something above us. But generally people believe in God, and they think God, his duty is to make us happy in this world. So their conception of religion, or even of God, doesn't go beyond trying to enjoy this material world, which is rajaguna. And then the idea that that God gave us the animals so that we can kill them and eat them. And those who don't believe in our religion, those very bad people who don't join our religion in killing animals, and they're vegetarian, and they're very bad people, and God throws them into hell forever because they didn't eat meat as He wants them to. He doesn't believe in our religion, so they have an idea of God as being some nasty person. So this is in the mode of ignorance. So you can find in the Christian religion, for instance, there's some touch of goodness, in as much as they believe in God, higher power, higher principle, beneficent overseer. And the motive of passion is there because even though they believe in God, their outlook, their worldview is we should enjoy this world, and then after we die, by the grace of God, we'll go to heaven and enjoy there also. The same idea as enjoying here. It's all meant for my own sense gratification. And in the tamasic idea that God punishes people nastily and that we are supposed to enjoy ourselves, inflicting pain on others by eating meat and all this kind of thing. So, sattvic outlook tends towards spiritual life. It's to see the spiritual dimension, to understand that life is not meant simply for gross sensual enjoyment, to come to a higher platform. That's indicative of sattva-gun. In rajagun, one is simply interested in enjoying this world, and in tamagun, there are different philosophies based on that. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. That sattva-gun, the philosophies in those who actually sit down and work out some philosophy, is not necessarily by being philosophical that, or the tendency to be philosophical in and of itself means that one has come beyond the gross, sensual, animalistic platform. So there must be some touch of sattva-gun there, even to be philosophical. But that philosophy which steps back from the world and seeks to go beyond it and seeks the inherent harmony in everything and seeks the spiritual, that is in sattva-gun. In rajaguna, there are philosophies, but they seek to justify this enjoying this material world and seek to give us ideas for how to enjoy this material world. This modern psychology is all based on the idea that, well, everyone should be balanced so that we can all live peacefully and enjoy this material world together. It's materialistic. And how to get yourself ahead and be a success. It's all rajasic. And the idea, well, if you're not happy in a relationship, then you just break it off. You see, you're married, don't like your wife or you don't like your husband, then divorce. Because if you're not happy, then why go on with it? So personal happiness becomes the criterion, the measure of everything. That's in rajagun. So there may be whole philosophies based on that and whole ideologies. For different ideologies, Marxist ideology utilitarian ideology, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. So the idea that we should all be happy in this world, this is materialistic, and it's stupid actually, because for all their philosophy, they overlook the overwhelming facts of Janma Mrityu Jaravyadhi. This world is a place of suffering, which is repeated birth and death, but being overcome by the strong desire to enjoy this material world, they completely miss this overwhelmingly important point and think, well, at least as long as we're here, let's try and enjoy it. So that is their foolishness, which means it's strong admixture of tamagun also. In tamagun, the philosophies, they tend toward nihilism, that just there's no point in living. Nihilism, skepticism, pessimism, everything is nothing, there's no real existence, there's no point in doing anything because there's nothing, there is nothing. There is nothing to strive for, just nothingness, just hopelessness. There are philosophers like that. So different kinds of philosophy. And Prabhupada would ask, what is your philosophy? With the idea everyone should have a philosophy to actually be a human being Or rather, Srila Prabhupada asked that question because he wanted to give them the philosophy or the actual understanding. Trivedha bhavati shraddha dehinam sasva bhavaja. There are three basic types of outlook for people who are dehinam, their swabha, who are trapped in material bodies, their swabhav, their nature develops according to the modes of nature. People say, I want to get in touch with myself. I really want to understand who I am. But what are they? Their mental state is made up of the three modes of material nature. So when they try to get in touch with themselves, they just get in touch with their false ego. They don't understand who they are. Therefore, tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. Therefore, we should approach a guru to inquire about our highest benefit. Shabde parecha nishnatam brahmanyu pashama ashrayam. And that guru means not someone with a psychology degree. Means who are they practically treated as gurus by people. And they pay them, they pay a psychologist with the idea that the guru means he's also, everything is by money. You see, you can buy a guru also. Pay him some money, he tells you, okay, do this. But nowadays, there's not so much psychiatric treatment. They just give people pills. They used to have psychiatric counseling and all. Still they do, but more than just pills. Oh, you're not feeling very happy these days? Okay, take a pill. Feel happy. Some pill full of caffeine. One little pill is like 100 cups of coffee. Zing! And you feel very good until the effect wears off. And then you feel worse before they ever started. So take another pill. And then you go zing. And then you go down again. Then you have to take more and more pills. And anyway, it ultimately makes the whole thing worse. But what is your what are your thoughts, Srila Prabhupada? What are you thinking about? Because Prabhupada wanted to mold that and give the right understand. There is a correct, there is a correct philosophy. That's also one kind of influence of tamaguna, that to think that there is no ultimate philosophy. You can't really understand anything. This is a satyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishwaram, the demoniac outlook. There's no real harmony in aparaspara sambhutam. There's no real harmony in anything. There's no real basis. There's definitely no God. It's just going on like that. We can't understand it by our own brain power. Means there's nothing to be understood. This is the conclusion. The blind man can't see, so he says that all these people, the blind men get together and they're all joking. We're the enlightened people. All these other people, they're talking about seeing things and they're just all nonsense people. We're intelligent. We blind people, we know they're all an illusion. There's no such thing as seeing anything. They're just imagining it. So we're the select few. We know that, you see, we can touch much better than others. We can feel, we can hear, our sense of hearing. See, we're so much more developed than them. Because they can't hear and find their way around by touch like us, so they imagine that they can see something. This is the philosophy. This is a possible philosophy of blind men trying to assert their superiority, because they don't know, they don't accept that there is a faculty of seeing, and therefore they refuse to admit that it's even possible. So philosophy. Philosophy begins atato brahma jignyasa. One should inquire into the nature of ultimate reality. This is the beginning. This is uttar mimamsa. Mimamsa is a philosophical term which means to consideration, to consider and come to a conclusion. Prior to that, there in Vedic philosophy, there's Purva Mimamsa, in which the first of the Brahma Sutras is Atharto Brahma Jignasa. In Purva Mimamsa, the first is Atharto Dharma Jignasa. So Dharma, how to act in this world in a pious way. This is Jaimini's Mimamsa. How to act in this world in a pious way that one can be elevated to the heavenly planets. But Atata. Ata-ata. Now, ata-ataha. Therefore, now, that means again, same thing, that when, same thing, tasmat gurum prapadyaja, tasmat, this word, thereafter, after what? After considering that everything in this world is useless and simply ends in misery, and even in the heavenly planets there's misery, therefore one should approach a guru. What for? Jignyasu shreya uttamam. To discover, to find out about the highest good. Because generally people think that the highest good is enjoying in this world. So similarly, atato brahma jignyasa. After considering that by following dharma, one can go up to the heavenly planets, but what's the use of all that? Having considered the uselessness of this material world, therefore one should inquire into the nature of Brahmans, or the ultimate reality. So this is the beginning of philosophy. That verse is there, Ahar nidra bhaya maithunam cha samanam etat pashubhya nararam dharmo hitesham adhiko visesham dharmena hina pashubhya nararam. That eating, sleeping, mating and defending the humans and the animals have in common. So a human being, his special prerogative is dharma, therefore without dharma he's simply an animal. Another rendering of this verse is gyanena hina pashubhya naranam gyano hitesham adhiko visesham. Gyana, or knowledge. Here knowledge not used in the sense of amassing facts and figures, and trying about this world and trying to understand how all these facts and figures fit together and coming up with various disciplines like psychology, philosophy, history, science, and so on. But jnana means jnanam teham savijnanam idam vaksham yasheshataha yajgat va nehabhuyon yajgatavyam avashishati. Knowledge means that knowledge by which we can understand everything. In other words, real knowledge means the philosophical insight by which we can understand everything, put everything in perspective, understand who we are, why we're here, why we're suffering, how we can get free from suffering. Everything is there. So this Krishna conscious movement is preaching this highest philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's actually the highest philosophy. In a world in which people are interested in popcorn and pornography, soda, Coca-Cola and cricket. On Sunday evening, a public program in Chennai, in a public place. Devotees had arranged it in advance. When I came, they apologized. They said, well, we expected, should have been a much bigger crowd, but there's a cricket match going on. So the people who, many people more would have come if there, of course, there's probably a cricket match going on all the time within 24 hours at some place in the world. But when they say it's a cricket match, it means an important cricket match. And it was India versus South Africa, I believe they said. So that was considered a big match, important. So the crowd became less. So this Krishna conscious movement is attempting to lift people up beyond the consciousness of thinking that cricket is important. More important than going to some Hare Krishna show. They think that getting a good job is important. Okay, cricket. Okay, that's trivial. But we're interested in getting a good job, business, getting money. Oh, We're interested in promoting the interest of the people, Communist Party. Yes. Bringing people to the platform of first of actual philosophy, actual thoughtfulness. But that won't even begin to arise unless people can understand that this material world is a place of suffering. Otherwise, they do all this philosophy. I don't even understand the most basic point that this world is a place of suffering, but that we are meant for enjoyment. We can enjoy. We are meant to be happy. We can be happy, but not by adopting any worldview with the thought that we can enjoy this world. So this real thoughtfulness and deep inquiry, it's lacking in human society. Even if we go to the philosophy department, there are hardly any philosophy departments. This one Srila Prabhupada met, I believe it was Joseph O'Connell, one Canadian university professor who is very favorable to our movement. And Srila Prabhupada suggested, Joseph O'Connell, he suggested to Prabhupada, well, maybe you can send some of your, he said, you see your disciples, they're very good in philosophy, he appreciated that. So maybe you can send some of them to our, they can enroll in our university and take the philosophy course. And afterwards, Prabhupada said, you see, no one's going to their philosophy course, so they're asking us if we can send someone. No one's interested. No one's, actually, if our devotees went to their philosophy course, they'd frustrate the professors. Completely, because even a little child in our movement, they have much more philosophical understanding than even the big philosophers. And there's recently someone, when I heard that, this Mormon church, their headquarters is in Salt Lake City, Utah. So some girls from one of our schools in America, when we used to have schools or what, so some young girls, daughters of devotees, they went there and on some out, you know, schools, they go on school outings and they take, so they went and visited and they went to their temple. They call them temples. They have temples. Their churches, they call them temples. So the guide was explaining that, you see, when you die, you go to heaven, and then your mother and father are there, your grandfather, grandmother, uncles, aunts. And one of the girls asked, well, how does that work? Because you want your mother to be at mother's age, and she wants her mother to be at her mother's age, and you want your grandmother to be at grandmother's age, and the grandmother wants to be very young and beautiful. So how does that work? And they couldn't answer. And they asked one or two more questions. They just stopped the whole tour and said, okay, finished. They were totally frustrated by little girls. So our movement is meant for lifting, at least lifting people to the platform of thoughtfulness, to think about these things. People are not even thinking about these things. That's why Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to have these books with the Sanskrit, Devanagari script, word-for-word translation, just to impress. This is very authorized, and it's something very serious. It's not just someone woke up one morning and he started writing something, whatever comes in your mind, whatever you feel like. This is very serious. A discussion. Shraddhama yo yang purusha yo yach chaddha sa eva saha. That everyone is made up of thoughts, of beliefs. Our thoughts get grouped in or directed in a particular way of thinking. And that determines who we are. And this is very serious discussion. Who we are. People don't understand who we are. Srila Prabhupada, he discussed various Western philosophies. Why should you discuss? Most people in the world had never they probably never heard the name of most of these philosophers who Prabhupada discussed, because they're, what they teach affects, even the most people never heard of Bishop Berkeley or whatever, the philosophers that were discussed. David Hume, what a influential philosopher, the world's, the modern Western world's, the father of atheistic skepticism, you could say that, and still very highly venerated among atheists and skeptics, even today. And according to them, he's undefeatable. His points, and actually they are, if you accept the axioms that most philosophers accept, they don't go deeper than just seeing our present situation. Or they may attempt to bring in God and the Bible and this and that. They're very poor attempts to offset him. So people haven't heard of these, but their thoughts, they come down in some kind of parampara and get modified and developed, and they very much influence the way we think. So this movement is meant for at least bringing people to the platform of thoughtfulness, at the very least. At least the people can start to think about these things. Our movement is meant for that, which is why Srila Prabhupada wanted to have these classes in the morning, and he said we should discuss this philosophy from various angles of vision. Srila Prabhupada himself, he would sometimes take the role of a devil's advocate or have his disciples do that, so we could see the teachings of Krishna consciousness from various angles of vision, not that we just accept it blindly. We should try to understand it. Also, philosophical understanding doesn't necessarily mean that or learning what's in the book so you can write the exam and get your Bhakti Shastri degree. One may be able to do that without deeply grasping the concepts, or even very deeply thinking about them. It's not exactly an academic approach in the sense of just trying to learn everything, but one should really try to understand everything. And to understand these teachings properly, one also should understand what are the possible objections to it. If we simply say, okay, this is our philosophy, and someone else has a philosophy, someone else, but what are the objections? What are other ideas? And how do our ideas stand up in relation to them? Of course, the word idea in itself, again, gives the idea of vada, or some kind of opinion based on someone's mental speculation. Philosophical understanding means to go more than superficial study, but really chitete koriya aikya, to make it one with our heart. Srila Prabhupada talks here about the heart. So the word heart, that also chitete koriya aikya, make it one with our heart, make it one with our very being. Make the words of the Guru one with our very being. So this philosophy we can begin to understand when the beginning will come when we understand our terrible situation. Atato Brahma Jignasa. That inquiry into the ultimate comes, we can begin to inquire when we understand we're in a very bad situation. This world is not a good place to be. It is simply a place of suffering. Now we have this project here, out in the country, very peaceful compared to the city. There's not the stress of the city. At least some maybe have some stress in trying to organize it all and manage it all, but overall it's a very peaceful situation. We can say that's in the mode of goodness compared to the city, which is in the mode predominated by the mode of passion. But it's not, the mode of goodness means not just being in the country and breathing fresh air. But one should be busy also, utilize the opportunity for cultivating Krishna consciousness, this highest knowledge. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? I've spoken about on this verse in similar ways previously because it's very, very important, actually. So if we consider the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita, so much valuable guidance, so much valuable knowledge for our lives and for that of the whole human society. Yeah.
All words are material. So.
Oh, here we go. Prayers of the personified Vedas. Yes. Yeah. All words are material. Well, why do you assume all words are material? Why? Because you can't imagine anything beyond material. What's your name?
Vishnu
Chitta. So Vishnu Chitta, is that material? No. It's a word? Vishnu is a word? It's not material. You presume it's material because you think that sound is made by, or words are made by humans by opening their mouth and air comes out, and the according to the different shapes made by the mouth, the tongue, the teeth, all these combined together to make different sounds combined with air, and that's heard via the ear. It's processed in the brain. These are all material things. But sound, that's described in Bhagavatam. There are different levels of sound. That is a material manifestation of the sound. But there are different terms. What are some different words in Sanskrit for sound? Shabda, dvani, nada. So you look in Bhagavatam, how there's original primordial sound. All sound comes from Omkar, which it has its existence beyond the enunciation of this sound. Sound, okay. Now, within your mind, you can say to yourself, everyone say to themselves within their mind, the Hare Krishna mantra. Do it in a little exercise here. Everyone did it? Did you hear it? You heard it in your mind. But there was no sound as such. So that's another manifestation of sound. Not in the form of sound. Or words. Words manifested without gross sound. So you wanted to ask a question, but the premise doesn't stand. So you can't. There's no use to make a question based on a wrong premise. All citizens of India are Muslims, and so why don't they all celebrate Eid? That's a question. But it's a meaningless question because all citizens of India are not Muslims. So if you say all sound is material, whatever else you want to ask based on the question, it becomes meaningless because the premise is flawed. Okay, another question. Someone back there? Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada always said that in human society there should be some religious system.
Srila Prabhupada said that in human society there should always be some religious system. Yeah, well, he said that in human society there is generally some religious system. Does he mean by that there should be some varnashram system? When Srila Prabhupada said that in human society there is a religious system, what he said along with that means there is some belief in God or some process for supplicating God, or if not God, at least some deities, or at least some, at the very least, some moral system based on belief in some higher power. Whereas he also said that within human society there should be varnashram division, but that's a different, slightly different discussion.
In this Bhagavad Prabhupada says that originally Shraddha comes from goodness.
Originally Shraddha comes from goodness. Well, originally one's outlook should be asango hi ayam purushaha karanam guna sango seth. In this material world, one, the living being associates with the material modes, and therefore he becomes as if one of those modes. But originally we are beyond the material modes. Shraddha, ultimately that means, in material understanding, Shraddha means perverse understanding. But Shraddha, that is, that means actually understanding of Krishna. Shraddha, in the fullest and true sense, means not one's belief, but one's direct experience of Krishna. When that becomes perverted, then we get mundane goodness, mundane passion, mundane ignorance. One's experience. That may be different in the spiritual existence also. Just like Hanuman, the Narottam Das quotes Hanuman, that Srinathe Janakinathe Abheda Paramatmane Tatapi Mama Sarvasvam Rama Kamala Lochanaha. He says that I know that Vishnu, Narayana, and Janakinath Rama, they are the same personality of Godhead. But still, my all in all is Rama, Kamala Lochana Rama. So that's his Shraddha, his inclination. This word Shraddha can also be said, one translation of it in this context is inclination. One is inclined toward different modes of nature. So one's original inclination is toward Krishna. And then even within that, even within pure Shraddha inclination, there can be various inclinations also. I'll just write that down. Yeah, one more question, then we'll finish. If there is any other, no. All right. Yeah. You gonna try rewording your question? How much can modern psychology be used in managing devotees? The whole idea of managing devotees sounds like something coming out of modern psychology. We're supposed to be serving devotees, aren't we? Managing them. It's like managing a group of wild animals or something. There may be some use. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the psychologists, they have insights into the workings of the human mind. Something he says like that. And we are, as much as we are raised in the modern society, we are products of it. So some of the ideas of modern psychology may apply, but be careful. Be careful, because it has a very wrong basis. We have to be very careful using these things. I recently, in America, I got a book. It was about dealing with difficult people. And even the title, it doesn't fit for devotees at all. It says, the title is How to Deal with People You Can't Stand. But someone you can't stand means someone you just really don't like them at all. But devotees don't think like that. At least they're not supposed to think like that. Someone you just, we're not supposed to. Devotees don't cultivate that kind of feeling about others. They cultivate the feeling of sarva bhuta hite rataha. They're being always engaged in the welfare of others. And then it went on to describe different kinds of difficult people, but it didn't fit with what my experience of devotees, even Western devotees, because the mentality is different to that of materialistic people. It was especially, it was describing about dealing with people in the workplace. I didn't find the book very useful at all. Although we may experience something difficult dealing with devotees. Main thing for management, Srila Prabhupada said, is if all the devotees are following all the regulative principles, chanting their rounds, that's the main management principle. That comes first. And then everything else we may see afterward. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.